Welcome to Complementary, a series covering the principles and practices of interface design hosted by Katie Langerman and Anthony Hobday. Today we'll be discussing skeuomorphism. All right, so today's topic is skeuomorphism.
How do you spell it?
First of all. Okay. Yeah, how do you say it? It's kind of a tongue twister of a word.
That's true. I'm not sure I've ever actually heard someone say the word out loud.
Skeuomorphism.
I assume that's it, but I think most of the time I read it. Maybe I have heard it in a talk of some kind, but there's an E and then a U and then an O in there, I think, and that's a bit of a strange one.
Maybe you don't say the O. Maybe it's just skeuomorphism. I think that's probably how most people say it.
We're going to get endless emails on the pronunciation guides, I'm sure.
That's the key takeaway here from this episode is we don't know how to say the word. Do we know how to define the word?
So every time I look this up, I think, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then I often forget afterwards. So I went and looked it up again for this episode to make sure I had it straight. And I suspect there's some nuance here, but the way I think about the word is that it is when there are ornamental sort of embellishments on an object of some kind, including an interface, which are left over from sort of a previous time in sort of history or technology. And I was about to give an example that's not interface related, but we had spoken about, you know, sort of my habits on this podcast, and I'm trying to give all of my examples as related to interfaces.
Okay.
In this case, I think it's fine because actually, I don't think I can give a good example in interfaces, which is part of the problem. And so I remember learning that sort of the first cars that were on the market often had things attached to them that came from the sort of horse and buggy world. And they didn't really do much, but they were there almost to say, this is a vehicle of some kind, right? They were just sort of cues that you were supposed to understand it in that way.
Yep.
Does that line up with your definition, your understanding?
I think so. I came across like someone breaking down the word in something I was reading. I was actually reading about beauty and skeuomorphism kind of came up in that topic. But I guess there's like, I'm going to butcher this, but is it a Greek word? And skeuos means container or tool and morph means shape. So it was like originally used to describe material objects, but now we use it to describe digital objects or digital interfaces rather. So I think that's kind of in line with what you're saying. It's like it previously was used to describe physical objects, but now we use it to describe interfaces because interfaces have replaced many physical objects for us.
And I think that's twisted almost over time to mean if it looks like something in the real world, which is not quite the same meaning, because there's this element of sort of visual richness where if you take a button, for example, in an interface, you can make it look more abstract or more realistic. And I don't necessarily know that a more realistic button should count as skeuomorphic, because I think, well, part of the definition was that it's not necessarily a useful thing that's been left on the object. It's something that's held over and maybe is meant to remind you of that older version of something, but actually it's not necessarily a useful addition to the new object. You know, so if you put something from a horse cart on a new car, it probably doesn't do anything. It's just there to make it look like a vehicle. But I can see why that sort of turns into, okay, so we made this button look like a real life button with the light source and the shadow and everything. And so that's like a holdover that we don't need from the real world. But then buttons in the real world don't need to stick out of their surface. They could be perfectly flat and they could be sort of matte plastic and they could have a printed label that hasn't got any depth. And you can still push them like you press a button in an interface with a mouse. And so actually a completely flat button could be entirely realistic in terms of how it would look in the real world. So it feels more to me like the more visual richness you add, it does have a benefit. It does have a practical use, which is that you recognize it as a button more quickly. And so I don't know if that counts as skeuomorphic. This is why whenever someone uses the word, I think, like, do I like it? And I tend personally to avoid it. I don't use the word skeuomorphic, even though it's a hot topic.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think it like it kind of, it can be used to describe different things. Like you can think about it in terms of metaphors in like the early operating systems, like the classic example of a floppy disk for a save interaction. Like that was taking a physical object that people understood to create a metaphor for an interface doing a similar interaction. And that's something that's like not relevant anymore, but I think that is considered skeuomorphism. But then there's like design. And I think a lot of people, when they think about skeuomorphism, they think about iOS and like very bubbly icons and like very realistic, like leather and like fabric physical touches to design. So I think that's like all under that same umbrella. And so it's difficult to talk about it because those are two kind of different things and they have different applications. So I think it's fair to kind of try and avoid the word and be more specific about what it is that you're talking about with interface design.
Mm. I really like your example about the save icon, because if you think about it, save icons... Okay, so the save icon references a floppy disk, which is physical, but the icon itself represents saving to the floppy disk and has only ever been in software interfaces, I assume, or related to computers. Maybe you had a save a floppy disk printed on a button on a computer casing or something. But basically, it's always been a software interface thing, except now we still use the save icon as a floppy disk, but we don't have floppy disks. And so is that technically skeuomorphism within the world of software interfaces? So it's making no reference to a historically real thing that existed. It's making reference to older software. Even though we've lost the floppy disk, we still have the icon. Maybe that's true skeuomorphism in interfaces. And a button that looks realistic is just a button that looks realistic, right? It doesn't need a word.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about any of this, but that feels, the floppy disk thing feels more like real skeuomorphism based on the definition I've read, at least.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. A little bit of a, I don't know, makes you really think. Does it like evolve over time? When does it stop being skeuomorphic if it's not a relevant metaphor anymore?
Mm. But it's no surprise, because the world of interface design and the theory of interface design is full of words that used to mean something else when they were coined by some, you know, researcher in the 1970s. And now they've been sort of misappropriated. And just how language works, I don't know, that's really a problem. But for me, when I try to be extremely specific about everything I say or write about, that sort of thing gets to me. So it's a personal problem, if not a industry problem.
I think it's important, especially for new designers just entering the field, trying to figure things out, can be a little confusing if they aren't using the proper terms, or knowledge gets shared, incorrect terms get shared over and over again, and kind of get trapped in dated terminology. I guess that can be problematic for everyone.
I believe so, but as long as we produce good interfaces, I guess it doesn't matter, right?
Call it whatever you want
to get there.
yeah, that's like the whole entire thing about design systems is naming things, and just doesn't really matter what you name things as long as everyone agrees and understands what it means. So I guess
Does that extend to changing the name of buttons to boopers?
You know, if your entire team is on board with that and that makes it easier for them to communicate with each other, go for it. I don't see any
issues. I just want to walk into an interface critique session and see some designers seriously sitting around a table saying, we just need to put a booper in the bottom right corner and then we're done. Should this booper be over here or should it be over here?
Just boop that booper a little over to the left, 8 pixels.
Hang on a second. No, boop is clearly the sound that it makes when you press it. It goes boop.
That sounds like a fun meeting. I want to be in that.
Yeah, probably there's some interface design team somewhere that's having meetings like that.
Yeah.
Probably companies like Family or the company that makes... Okay, so there's the app Honk made by Benji Taylor, and then I think his new app is Family, right? It's the crypto wallet.
Oh, and yes. I have heard about this.
And so it looks incredible. I've got no reason to ever sign up or download it because I don't get involved in crypto. But I want to use it purely for the interaction sort of design involved, because it looks incredible. They've sort of thought about everything in terms of a sort of physicality, which is sort of interesting here because we're not talking about physicality, but it's another way of referencing the real world, right? Is making it act more physically. And I don't think that counts as skeuomorphism, even if people call looking more physical skeuomorphism.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm getting off topic.
Well, I think that's kind of relevant, though, because we are seeing more designs that are kind of feeling more physical, I think, right now. And so there is talk of like, oh, skeuomorphism is coming back.
Yes.
Is it? What do you think about that? Is it really coming back, or are we just talking about different things?
Often I see this, I don't know how you describe the type of graph, but it goes up and then down and up again, and it sort of floats around the center point, but it gets closer each time. And so maybe the first rise of skeuomorphism was really high, and we got the iOS 6 style stitched leather that everyone thinks of when you say skeuomorphism. And then that dropped off and went way below the line, and we got flat design, right? So maybe we've seen basically the first rise and fall. And now it feels like maybe it's coming back because people say that fashion is cyclical. So maybe now it's coming back, but actually I think it will be less extreme at the top end. And so I think we're seeing, and I guess more accurately I should say, we're seeing more visual richness come back. It might not necessarily be all entirely realistic, but people are adding more things like depth and shadows and lighting effects to things. And it's not just a flat shape in the interface. It's something that looks a bit, I don't know a word better than rich to describe it, which kind of annoys me because I want something, but visually rich is what I always say. So yeah, it seems like it's coming back in that sense, but I don't think we'll ever get back to the heights of iOS 6.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I agree with that. I'm pretty excited about it if you think about it in that way, because I think flat design came about, like it was kind of described as we want simplicity and more breathing room and white space and we don't need all this clutter. And like, that's great. I kind of love that, but I want to have more fun. So maybe they're basically taking like the good parts of really realistic design, combining it with more simplicity and attention to detail and like just showing you what you need to see. That sounds like a really fun combination to me. So I'm not really like looking at what I'm seeing on Twitter right now and thinking, oh, skeuomorphism is back. I'm just thinking people are having a lot of fun right now and bringing some life to their designs and thinking more about interactions. And I guess richness is a good word to use. So I don't feel the need to like label it as a trend necessarily. I just think it's a kind of a natural evolution of design.
And you might have noticed that interface design trends tend to be reactionary. And so I wouldn't be surprised if flat design was essentially a reaction to the height of skeuomorphism. And now the increase in visual richness is a reaction to flat design. And those don't happen sort of immediately, but you can see them sort of peeking through. Companies will come along and do something a bit wild, and they'll release something that's a bit visually richer. But it still takes a while for it to be sort of filtering into the mainstream. But an interesting topic there is that flat design was sort of brought along the democratization of design skills, because it's easier to design a flat interface than it is a skeuomorphic or visually rich or realistic interface, because you don't have to get into Photoshop. You can use tools like Sketch originally and now Figma predominantly, because they are good at drawing flat shapes in vectors. Whereas if you want to get loads of textures in there, like stitched leather, Figma doesn't really have the tool set for that. You know, maybe they'll add it in response to this sort of reactionary trend. But I do worry that people will be less able to design interfaces if suddenly visually rich or visually realistic interfaces come back as the sort of predominant trend.
Yeah, and I think to that note, like the web has evolved a lot to enable more creativity in front-end development. So not only design tools, I can see how design tools could hold us back in some ways, but CSS has been like on fire the past year and a half. We're seeing all kinds of new stuff that kind of opens up visual creativity. So that's kind of what I'm seeing a lot on my timeline. I guess that's probably just indicative of the people that I follow, but see a lot of code pens with like really rich visual design using some newer CSS techniques, especially with like all of the color kind of stuff that we're going to get soon. It kind of opens up the doors, I guess, to be able to experiment and play. But I agree that flat design is, it's definitely my go-to. And I've noticed in my side projects lately, it's looking really flat. And I think I'm starting to feel inspired by some more depth and richness that I'm seeing from other designers. And I want to explore that for myself, which is like a first, because I'm very much like a just flat design, get it done, focus on the usability of it, I think. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're developing your own stuff, like I code my own website. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to go to the effort of coding that if I had to use all these sort of more realistic effects, skeuomorphism, figuring out what combination of six drop shadows is going to make a button look more realistic when I can do a flat button in, you know, much less lines of code. And I know we try not to date these episodes, but there was a bit of an explosion on Twitter recently in terms of someone built a shiny button to the point that it asks for your webcam permissions and it reflects from your camera. It makes the button reflective because it like reflects you. And just, I did it on my phone, right? So there's a camera built in and most laptops have cameras built in. If you're using a standard monitor, I guess you don't have access to it as easily. But just seeing a button look that realistic was a bit scary because it looked so much like the real world. That felt like ultimate skeuomorphism. And they even included finger smudges when you pressed on the button, which is just ridiculous. And I was both scared by it and I was more, maybe because it's interface design, but I was more excited by that than I am by AI. It's like, this is the future of technology I want to see, is every website asking me for my camera permissions so it can show me my reflections on buttons. Imagine like a Chrome header on a website. That would be fantastic. I mean, it would be fantastic until everyone did it, and then it would be awful, and we'd be like, please stop.
Please stop watching me. I'm so glad you brought this up. I saw that yesterday and was like, oh, wow, I'm so glad we're talking about skeuomorphism this week, because this is, like, so relevant, and it definitely blew up. I thought it was awesome. I just love seeing people completely go wild and, like, push the boundaries and think about things like that and then actually execute on it. I don't think it's a practical, I'm not going to use it. I don't think anyone's going to use it, but like, just, I love when people push the web and design like that. It just makes you think more about it.
Mm. And a lot of styles are reactionary in terms of new technology. People find these new technologies and they think, how can I use this? You can imagine when Apple started producing desktop computers and they became much more popular after the return of Steve Jobs. They had that period where they were making shiny buttons in macOS. And you can imagine that's almost a perfect storm if you had shiny buttons and webcam access at an operating system level, because you trust your operating system to have access to your webcam, whereas you don't necessarily trust a website. If they could have done that across the entirety of macOS, where every shiny button was actually subtly reflecting what was in your room.
Oh my gosh.
That's potentially a way to make it private, because Apple's quite well known for sort of respecting your privacy in terms of access to your camera and everything, but also make the operating system or the interface as a whole across the computer just feel a lot more immersive. That would have been sort of the perfect time, because I don't think we'll go back to shiny buttons, and so we've sort of lost the chance to do that across an entire operating system. Maybe in iOS, what are we on now, 14? Maybe on iOS 15 or 16, 17?
Do you think they're
17?
Listening?
Yeah, maybe they'll go back to shininess when they've seen that tweet.
Maybe.
There was something else I wanted to say about the rise again, and it's that you were sort of talking about this. We have flat design, and you don't think we're going to go back to the same thing. In a way, it's much better that it's come back, and it's a bit less extreme if it does stop here, because that means there's now this combination of things you can choose from. So it felt very either or before. You either had skeuomorphism, or there was a big switch, and you had flat design. But now it seems like as a designer, you can happily choose between both, and people aren't going to, you know, call you out on Twitter for it. They're going to say, oh, this is an interesting application, which means we've just got more style choices available to us for interfaces, which is the best of all worlds, really. It's never good if a style is hated so much because it's so overused that people cannot use it anymore, because suddenly you've sort of lost a tool out of your toolbox.
Right.
So it's nice that now you have the option. You could go flat if you want it to be clean, clear, everything. Or you could go more realistic if you want it to be a bit more expressive or draw people in or, you know, reinforce a brand in a special way. So I like that it's come back in that sense because it gives us more options. I don't think it should ever be one or the other.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we'll see that a lot more with branding sites in particular for products. So the product itself is probably going to continue being kind of more flat, traditional design as all of these current tools are. But the marketing site can go wild and kind of like integrate. I think it's a really nice design when you see like really clean interfaces from a product like that combined with some like really interactive, rich, we're just going to keep using the word rich throughout this, design elements to kind of complement that. I think that's kind of a nice trend.
Yeah, especially if you have this plain interface, which is basically what you're saying, but a plain interface around the really expressive, rich element. It's going to make that expressive, rich element so much more impactful. Whereas back in the days of iOS 6, stitched leather, if the whole app was trying to look like a wallet or a notepad or something, then none of it really got a chance to shine. But if you have a relatively flat or less rich marketing website, and then you scroll down and the main call to action is suddenly a shiny button that reflects you from your webcam, it's going to, maybe this is a bad thing, but it's going to have a much bigger impact on you as a visitor, you know, and draw your eyes to it. So hopefully everyone can find the balance and not go too wild with the new options.
I think another nice balance that I'm seeing lately is like really realistic or rich icon design for apps. And then the app is still, you know, pretty traditional looking and more on the plain, flat side. But that's like a really fun way, I think, for brands to get to express themselves. It's in a very confined space, tiny little, you know, app icon, but you can really fit so much in there. And I'm sure icon designers are having a blast right now getting to bring back some of these like more visual elements into their designs.
Yeah, there's been that sort of contingent of people who design iOS icons, and they've been plugging away for years on the visually rich side of the spectrum. And I guess they're having their time to shine in terms of skill set, because they don't have to hide in that bunker anymore designing only iOS app icons.
Yeah, designing them just for themselves. Now everyone's like, where can I get this? Can you share? I'd like it.
Give me a tutorial.
We've kind of touched on this a little bit, but like, what are some of the practical benefits of, I guess, like either understanding skeuomorphism or however we want to label it, and also applying that in some ways to your design?
I think we talked about in a previous episode these costly value signals. And so one of the benefits for a designer of skeuomorphism and understanding how to create visually rich things is that people are more impressed by your work, because it should be clear that it took you longer to design something to look like a realistic button than it did to design something that's flat. You know, maybe the most time you spend on a flat button is on padding and the rounded corners, but on a visually rich button, you're having to pull in textures and make sure it works across different breakpoints. And so just because it's sort of less flexible as a visual style, I think it's harder to pull off. And that means it's a more impressive skill set. So there is that. Of course, you can overdo it, and that probably reflects poorly on you if you're just using that skill set. You know that whole, if you've got a hammer, everything is a nail saying? It's like, if you can design visually rich things, maybe everything you design is visually rich, and then it's all a jumbled mess. So there's definitely that side of it. I'm curious about how it all tie into sort of design system work, because it feels like design systems have really benefited from this idea of extremely flexible, sort of vector-based flat design. I'm wondering how a design system looks if you have to think about textures all of a sudden.
Design tokens. don't know. But yeah, that's the answer to everything.
But do you make design tokens out of textures? That feels like it's not tokenizable. If you see what
oh,
I mean.
Anthony, everything is tokenizable. everything. But yeah, I think for design systems, ideally you have your structure in place to handle all of your kind of basic flat design. And like, so if design tokens are focused more mostly on sizing and spacing and padding and all that stuff, you should have the infrastructure to then add like motion or I think textures, sure. Why not? You could have textures depending on how you're going to implement that. Like one thing, at least at GitHub for brand, is tokenizing variable fonts. Like that's kind of a challenge because a variable font is like, you know, unlimited. You can do whatever you want to it, but you can still create design tokens for specific subsets of a variable font. And you can do the same for gradients. So I think there's plenty of ways that design systems could start integrating these things. And that's kind of that's like the whole goal of a design system is that you have your foundations really solid so that designers can explore on top. And then you can start to see those patterns that they're bringing and pull them back into the system. So that's like a dream scenario is the system is working so well that people are able to explore and be creative on top of it and pull stuff back in.
I suppose that's a good match to what you're saying about, you know, the combination of flat design and more visually rich design. If the design system supports those foundational sort of flat design or simpler design approaches and then supports your ability to explore on top, that's still a good approach, even if you don't necessarily tokenize individual textures because maybe they're unique to their situation or something.
Mm-hmm. Embellishing.
Yeah, so,
I think we have to use the word embellish.
You have a section in your design systems site that says embellishment. It's like, go wild. But only with these rules. That feels like a practical benefit to a designer is that you suddenly have one more skill that you could sell, essentially. Even if you're working full-time at a company, you know, it looks better if you can have more options to explore for an interface.
Yeah.
Especially if you design websites, like you were saying. If all you can design is flat interfaces and then someone comes along and they can inject a bit more realism, that might be exactly what the company wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see benefits there. But I think the benefits to people who use the interfaces are sort of overlooked sometimes because designers are the ones that get so excited about skeuomorphism. Whereas actually to someone who's not a designer, probably skeuomorphism brings them closer to what they're used to if you're talking about how it should look realistic. If it looks just like a button on a hi-fi or something, then actually that just matches what they're used to seeing in real life from buttons. So it's not necessarily more impressive to them, even though it is more impressive to the designers. It's almost as if flat design is like more of a departure. And so maybe people are more surprised or shocked by flat design if they're not designers themselves. So having said that, even if it's not particularly impressive, the more realistic you make it, I think that the benefit or one of the sort of more clear benefits is that when you look at an interface, you understand it more easily because it's using cues potentially from the real world, potentially from something else you're familiar with to help you understand what you can do with that interface.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll always be a benefit. But we saw it with flat design. You saw some flat design buttons like on the gov.uk website. They always kept this sort of depth indicator, this big thick line underneath the button, even though they're completely flat. They don't look it because they've got this darker, thick line underneath it, sort of like a solid drop shadow. And that always made the buttons look more clickable. And so that was always my preferred approach to flat design, just because it does bring some of those realistic cues in that can help you understand how that interface should be used.
Yeah. So usability and accessibility could be considered a practical benefit, at least for sighted users, in bringing more realistic presentations into your UI.
And it gives you more dimensions to work with, if that makes sense. I mean, almost literally, if it's like the third dimension of depth,
yeah.
You've got more channels along which to communicate with the person who's using the interface to say, this is a button. Whereas with flat design, often a button might look like something else just because there's only so many sort of things you can tweak for each of your elements, like corner radius, to tell people it's a button versus something else that's just a container, for example.
Right.
So I guess that gives you, in your parlance, it gives you more tokens to work with, you know, more types of tokens.
Yes, more tokens. Always down for that. I think I'll share some final thoughts just based on this conversation and how I've been feeling about the what I'm seeing on Twitter, at least from new dimensional designs. But I think for me, I am going to take away from this, I think, looking more into these designs, even looking at the past and looking at old designs that we consider skeuomorphic and figuring out what it, like the aspects of that that I think I like and could be applicable to design today to kind of embellish the flat design that I know and love. So for me right now, that's thinking more, and I think these are just basic things that probably all designers should be doing regardless of skeuomorphism, but thinking more about your button design and like the shadows and the depth that you're, that you want to, and borders that you want to bring in there rather than just a flat button with no border. And like bringing in depth everywhere that makes sense. Like thinking about all the current trend of dashboard design with like the left-hand sidebar and the top bar, and maybe not just having it all completely flat with dividers, but like thinking about adding a little bit of depth in there. And then like interactive states, making things look pressed or active when they're pressed or active. I think those are kind of the things that I've been focusing on that are related to skeuomorphism. But I could see it benefiting designers to kind of go take a look at some of those old designs and like think about what it is that stands out to you in those designs that could be applicable today. And then join us on this journey of embellishing flat design and kind of like bringing back some of this realism, I suppose, in a more, I don't know, concise way.
Yeah. It, hopefully it's not too long a journey. Hopefully it we go a short distance and then be like, this is good. We can stop here.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe a small amount of time. Check in with everyone. Is everyone, anyone's feet hurting or anything? We can stop. No, I think my sort of final thought is similar to yours, actually, in that people should learn ways to embellish their designs more, to make things more visually rich. But I would suggest that people not focus on things like how to make a container look like it's made out of stitched leather, because how often are you going to be able to use that? You know, you've maybe got one marketing website in you with that technique and then you're done. Whereas ways to divide a page up that look more realistic or more visually rich, or ways to make a button look deeper, and like you're saying, press states and everything, if you can learn those more general purpose techniques and figure out ways to make those sort of generic components or elements look more realistic, I think those will be useful in almost every project you do, just because it's something you can explore. Whereas the really hyper-focused, like stitch leather approach, it feels less useful across the board. So that also goes hand in hand with being not too embellished. You know, if you just do these little touches here and there. The example I've always liked the most is in Halide, or I think it's pronounced Halide, but the camera app for iOS, designed by Sebastian DeWitt and someone else whose name I forget right now. But they've been making this camera app for iPhones for years, and the app is generally flat except for the take photo button, the main button. Really subtle depth cues. And it's my favorite button because you don't necessarily notice them at a glance, but they're there to add a bit of visual richness. And that's been there ever since. And it felt like they were bringing some of the sort of tactileness from cameras through to the iOS, but not making it too noticeable. And so I like that approach. I think more people should take that approach, and should have been for the last 10 years even. I don't think we had to give it up completely, which is a shame.
Yeah. I think the tagline here is less is more. Skeuomorphism, less is more.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Great. Well, thanks for another great conversation. This was fun. And
thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll catch you in the next one.